Hi, and welcome to another Monkey Gaming podcast. In this edition, we are focusing on a game called King of Dragon Pass by the developer A Sharp. King of Dragon Pass, right from the start, I'll just say, is a fully accessible. Oh, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm going to bring James in to take that weight off my shoulders. James.
Maybe a kind of RPG, I guess.
RPG stroke, adventure stroke.
Yeah, it's
battle.
It's based quite heavily on like the old Dungeons and Dragons games from the 80s. So yeah, it's not really. I don't know, but when people talk about RPGs these days, they're thinking of stuff like. Final Fantasy or World of Warcraft. Well, that's an MMORPG, but games that have real-time combat and stuff, which obviously this game doesn't have because it's more about the menu-based sort of the management. It's kind of like a management game in some ways, isn't it?
Do you see how I struggle there right away to describe it?
I think part of what's making it difficult is it's just very unlike games being released these days. It's unconventional.
It was a very innovative concept, and you make a lot of decisions in the game as well, don't you, James? It's all about decision-based. You make decisions either in combat or when you're looking after your tribe, and the thing I like about it is decisions you make in the first time you play it could have a serious effect, even somewhere down the line in the game, James. Did you find that in years that decisions you made had an effect later on in the game?
Absolutely.
I thought was absolutely fantastic. There's even like game book elements as well in there, James, isn't there? We're making different choices and they look at it like it's almost like you're a kind of saga that you go through, isn't it?
There's a lot of a lot of text, a lot of writing has gone on.
Yes.
I felt like the writing maybe wasn't as good as it could have been, but it was definitely, functional. There was a lot of it. They went into a lot of effort to describe the world and to kind of paint a scene. And I thought there's a lot of backstory, there's a lot of, they thought of various mythologies and, I mean, it's Tolkien inspired, clearly,
very
Lord of the Rings.
So.
But, they've put their own twist on it. At this point, I've seen so many different attempts at like the fantasy world that it kind of becomes hard to distinguish them all.
I must say I read a lot of fantasy books, but in terms of a gaming experience, it was actually quite new to me because a lot of like role playing games are completely inaccessible to visually impaired people, James, aren't they? So I was actually really hooked on this game for months, and I literally here mean months, because I mean there must be thousands of hours worth of gameplay in this game, isn't there, James?
I found it quite intimidating when I first started playing. I don't know if you felt this way, but there were so many options and choices and
paths.
It wasn't very immediately clear what to do
and different strings to its bow. I suppose you can look at it as different strings, threads, as well. And I suppose I can't even describe the basics of it. The basics of it is like set in a fantasy world, a mythical world, and you're basically looking after a tribe, aren't you, James? And you've got loads of different, you fight wars, you've got to look after your tribe, but you've got to feed them, and if you run out of food, your tribe start to starve, and it's really in depth, and it's actually scary because at times when I first played the games, I wasn't looking after my tribe right, and they all started dying, and I got quite intimidated because it felt like I was losing kind of family. This was my responsibility, and they were all
little Timmy has starved.
You're not going to get a name Timmy in it, I'm afraid. But
little Timbert the fourth. You kind of decide where you should allocate your resources, don't you? If anyone's fronting, if anyone's disrespecting, you get to get to send a little a war party, but you get to choose how many of this dude, how many of that dude. You
Yeah.
get to choose what kind of attack you want to do, like if you want to maneuver, if you want to skirmish, if you want to go for like their cows, steal some cows, which I quite like. It's not the type of decision making you really get in a lot of games these days, is it? It's you have control over so many aspects of what is going
Yeah,
on.
you know what I liked about it? There's in the game, that, as I say, it's mythical, and there's like different gods in it that you can do sacrifices to. So if you're really struggling in a battle, you can actually sacrifice to, oh, I can't remember the god's name, but
Orlan, I think,
like, or
Orlaith.
Orlans, I don't think it's him. He's not the god of war, but there's a god
No.
of war in it. Something like, just say Pluto, the god of war, just for. It's not obviously, but and the god of war, you can sacrifice to him, and then he gives you added strength to drive your or win a battle, things
Just
like that. And
like in real life.
yeah, so well, I wish.
So
Yeah.
it's I found that I don't know if this was your experience, but I found that I was like a dog at the controls of a helicopter, to quote Charlie Brooker. Like I was just fumbling about in the menus, not really knowing what I was doing for a long time. I was kind of just exploring and seeing what happened when I pressed this button and when I go in here and.
You know what I did actually? I started off like that, and then I ended up going into the controls and actually reading the manual. Just even the basics of the manual,
That's usually a
just
good
to.
idea, isn't it?
Oh,
I
it's
tend
just.
not to do that, though. I tend to just, for hours, just fumble.
Which is actually a really good thing to do as well, because it's only by fumbling around that you learn it, isn't it? You could sit and take, but a manual, you're going so far, and then. Meaning no disrespect to the manual of the game at all, but you look at other manuals and you go, my attention is waning, I'm getting bored now, I just want to play the game. But the manual is really, I mean, there's a part in the game. Did you come across hero quests in the game? Now, I still am none the wiser what that is, and I do have to revert to the manual occasionally, but there's nothing wrong with that,
I think was that I think I did it. So are there many different types of quests, or is hero quest like the
I think
quests?
there's different. There's Hero Quest is the main one, but in that category, different quests are embedded.
Because
Oh,
I went to the realm of the
that's it.
gods. And I had to unite all the
That's your Hero
clans.
Quest. Yeah,
And I
yeah.
did it, and they all
Did
united.
you manage it? I
Yeah,
failed. I
no, you have
died.
to, because there's like a round stone that starts talking about, oh,
That's
you're gonna
it.
fail, you're not gonna do anything. So I
Yeah.
threw a net over it, and it shrank
Oh.
down to nothing, because of course that's the reaction you expect, right?
Yeah, I think I did that.
And but then there's this guy who,
That's right.
I don't remember what his story was, but some of the other clans had an
It was
issue with
an
him.
ancestor or something, wasn't it? Was it no, an
I
ancestor
can't
in.
remember. I don't think I paid very much attention to him. But at least one other clan didn't like him,
This
and
is
they were
it.
like, I want you to essentially let me like decapitate this
That's
guy."
it.
And I was like, "No, if you join us, then we can sort this out diplomatically." And he was like, "Oh, well, I don't understand what that means, but I'm willing to try it." Which I thought was very
That's right.
progressive for a medieval style
That's
clan
right.
dude.
And the guy I picked to do the hero quest, I did another decision. I think it was some kind of cat people clan or something. I can't quite remember off the top of my head, but I did the wrong decision and ended up cutting the guy's head off and he failed the hero quest because obviously he
Oh, he
died.
didn't have a head anymore,
Because he didn't have a head, and the head's, the game's good, but the head wasn't, talking once it had been decapitated, so it
That's
was really
the
disappointing.
sequel.
Well, yeah.
Did you encounter the duck people?
Yes. Did you get raided by them?
No, because I made them my friends.
Oh, no, I
Because
killed them.
my advisors were like, "Oh, they have like really nice lands and stuff. We have to go and take that off them." I was like, "What? These are like cute little duck people. Why would I
No,
do that?"
I took the lands because I saw them. This is horrible. I saw them as an inferior species.
Oh my
So
God. Okay, Hitler, calm
I
down.
took them.
Wow.
I took.
It's
Should I
all
be
coming out
saying
now, isn't
this?
it, Stuart?
Should I be saying this in the
Very
podcast?
revealing.
Oh no.
And
So,
you felt as though you had to purify the
but
world.
no, wait a minute. No, wait a minute now. Wait a minute. Do you know what I did? Do you know what I did? I went to them and I says, "Look, give me half your lands and you could have the other bit. We just want half your lands and we'll leave you in peace with
that's
the rest.
That's not reasonable.
Of it, right?
What, Stuart, what if someone came to you and was like, oh, okay, Stuart, I want half your stuff and then I'll leave you alone?
Well, that's maybe why the next message I got was, you are being raided by the duck people.
Yeah.
But
that's a very scary message to get, believe
me. But you know what I did, though? Because I was in my own turf, what I did was, there was a, you know how you get a decision to use the land that you've got?
Yeah.
And I used, and I put a lot of, footmen are like one of your army, you know, the, a lot of the backbone to your army, in a way. I combined footmen with weapon thanes, who are your skilled warriors, aren't they, the James? And I absolutely annihilated the duck people.
Oh, man. So the duck people are no more now, they're gone.
In my game, they are extinct.
They are extinct. Bloody hell, that's quite a battle. Yeah. So they send every single, like, old man, young child, woman in to fight, they're no more. That's
yeah,
pretty brutal.
I just... Yeah, they have quacked their last quack.
Quacked their last. Poetic in a way.
And I took the lands.
Oh, now the lands are yours. Okay.
So the lands are mine, and I am prospering. I am. I've got more farmers. I'm recruiting cows.
I kind of regret why I did now, because I obviously I was all buddy buddy with them, because I mean sentient duck people. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I'm running out of food, you know, my guys are starving.
Oh,
so maybe
I
had an obligation to them to kill the dog people. Maybe it was a poor choice I made. These are the questions you must consider when playing this game.
Just one bad decision on it could actually end your game 20 years down the line, and that's the frustrating bit.
Again, like real life.
You know, it's just unbelievable. I mean, now I think I paid... It was down in price. I paid £3.99 for this game, and I think it's a way back up to £7.99, but it is actually worth...
Yeah, you'll get a lot of entertainment out of it. It looked as well, because there's a lot of content, but it also looks like it has a lot of replay value.
I think it does. I think, and, you know, if you ever get to the end of it, you know, I think this is my 35th attempt or something, you know, because one decision that I make wrong, it just destroys the whole of my game. See, when you played it, actually, there's a thing. You've got three types of clan that you can be. You could be a peaceful nation or clan. You can be balanced, or you can be a war clan. Did you pick? I think balanced is the right way. Because I went a war clan to begin with, but then I made so many enemies that I was just...
Those Black Rock guys.
Yeah.
That clan.
And like the Badger clan, that's the thing.
Wait,
mistakes.
I was the Badger clan.
Oh, did you? Oh, I made my own up. I call mine the Beverage clan, just because that's my second name. So I was Clan Beverage.
I just stuck with Badger.
Did you?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with doing
I felt
that.
I like badger was a pretty good, you know, descriptor. If I had to identify as an animal, it might be a badger. So, you know.
Interesting.
Stuck with it.
I don't know. I thought the McFadgen clan.
That was already a clan, though. That's kind of retreading history a bit, isn't it? I was like, wasn't that one of the big clans in Scotland in ye olde times?
God
I
knows.
I don't know. Honestly, my history's bad. I could be totally wrong. If you're listening to this and that's wrong, don't.
We're
you know,
so sorry.
Don't write in and complain because I'm admitting ignorance.
We don't know about that one, but
or maybe like I feel like an animal is a good clan.
Well, and
name.
There's loads of animal clan. There's the eagle clan, I think, in there as well, isn't
there?
Cool. I think that would be a great clan to be
eagle
actually.
Clan.
The
they
eagle.
Sound pretty warlike though. The eagle clan aren't going to be like
they ain't going to be. You're not going to be mates with them, are you? And some of your clan is it the. Began with an H, there was a clan that hated us with a passion, and they kept raiding us, you know, because you get different seasons throughout the game, and there's a season that's designed especially for war, and they just kept raiding us and taking all our food, and it's disastrous. And then I'm trying to raid clans back to get food, and I'm still losing battles, I'm not doing my tactics right. And it's a very bloodthirsty type game as well at times, isn't it?
Yeah, it has a really strong, I think, like Game of Thrones vibe.
That's a good way of putting it.
But obviously, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a re-release. Did we find out this was a re-release of a game in the 90s?
This was a PC game or something, James, wasn't it? Back in 1998, and then...
Was it 98?
I'm sure it was way
that
back
was a
in 98.
Really good year for games.
Yeah, it seemed to be. That was when I first started getting into completely off the subject into FIFA games. But anyway, back to back to the point. They released it as an app. Now, do you know, just because we talk about accessibility so much, this game, when it first came out, was completely and utterly inaccessible to voiceover on iOS devices. James, did you know that, or?
I did not know that. So he, oh yeah, because didn't you actually? I think you've told me that the developer consciously changed the game to be
He
accessible,
was
right?
emailed, and I think his name's David Dunham, if I remember right, with the actual developer of the game, and he actually redesigned his whole gaming engine to make the game fully accessible to visually impaired people. And as a side note, what he then did, which I thought was really clever, was he actually designed a little code in his game so that he actually knows how many people are playing the game through VoiceOver, the built-in screen reader
Oh wow.
on.
Has he made the info public?
He, I'm not sure. All I know is that he has a record of how many people actually access the game through
That
VoiceOver.
would be extremely interesting to find
Well,
out.
I'm hoping it's paid. I think it has. I think it's paid dividends because it's so popular among the visually impaired community. But the reason I'm praying that it has is because he's bringing out a sequel to the game, or a prequel, one of the two, called Six Ages, which is set in the same world as King of
Okay,
Dragon Pass.
is that also like a port from an older game, or is it a brand new?
I think it's a brand spanking new, by the
Ah,
look of it, on
interesting.
Twitter. It's not been released yet, but
No.
it's called Six Ages, and it's set in the same world as King of Dragon Pass. Whether it's going to go, I think it's going to be a completely different game.
Yeah.
But it just, oh, I can't wait till it comes out.
Oh,
Cannot
that'll be
wait.
interesting. Do you know when that might release?
All it's got is sometime this in 2016.
Okay.
But I am keeping up to date on there's a Twitter feed at Six Ages. There's a Twitter account that you can keep up to date with information there. But if it's anything like, I don't know how they can possibly make it better. Maybe the writing then, James, as you're
Maybe it might just
pointing out.
be being fussy, you know, it's certainly not badly written at
I
all.
didn't. Wasn't it noticeable to me at all, the writing? But I wonder if it's because I was so enthralled in the actual mechanics of the game that I've just never
Yeah,
noticed
it does
the.
combine to kind of to be really gripping, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're creating a saga. That's the way it's described in the App Store. Create your own saga of mythology and intrigue or something, isn't it? I think that's the way
Yeah.
it's described. And it goes over. You can pick varying difficulties of the game as well. And I think the idea of the game is you have to become king of the whole mythical world, is the right way to. Or is it, I'm trying not to spoil anything as
Yeah, I
well.
think that's, yeah.
You have to become king of all your domain, basically, and it takes you about 30 years, and I've never managed it yet.
I've been thinking actually about what makes this game so unusual, and I think that one thing it does really well is it approaches something called ludonarrative dissonance really well. And so ludonarrative dissonance is quite a pretentious term that a lot of academics are throwing around about games these days. And essentially what it means is ludo means play, obviously narrative means, you know, narrative
It's a
story,
story.
and dissonance is how those ideas aren't combining properly in some ways. So in a game like Uncharted, say, which stars, you know, Nathan Drake, who's a very Indiana Jones-like character, you know,
Oh,
ha
yeah.
happy-go-lucky, charming treasure plunderer guy. And in the cutscenes and like the videos in the game, he's always, you know, cracking wise and just there for a good time and pretty decent guy, you know. But in the game, when you're controlling him, you're a mass murderer. You kill at least like 500 people in every game.
Oh,
And
man.
so when you think about it, you think about this charming dude, and then you think about this guy's committing genocide. They're not really the same guy, are they? It's hard to believe that a normal sort of nice guy, or at least someone who seems approachable, would do that, would kill those people. And that is a problem in a lot of games these days, a lot of, you know, more complex but more inaccessible games where the story they're trying to tell doesn't really mesh very well with the gameplay. Like it's they have to make sacrifices, but in a game like this, you don't have to make those sacrifices because the story and the gameplay are so linked, you know? So everything feels consistent internally, you know, in the world.
And I suppose, like, so, like, you know that game, Uncharted, that on this kind of theme, does he have to kill all of these people? You know, do you have
Pretty
the choice?
much,
He
yeah.
does actually have to. That's what I like about King of Dragon Pass in a way, but you know, going back to like the duck people, you don't actually, as James said, you could be friends with them, but it's, you know, on your head. You know, it's up to you what you want to. You've got full control of the whole game. You know, like Uncharted, what you're saying there is he pretty much he has to kill these.
Yeah.
You've not got any say
After
in
the
what he
cutscene
does.
ends, he
You know,
becomes a murdering psychopath.
he becomes a murderer. Yeah. So that I would prefer the types of games like King of Dragon Pass where I had some control over the character's destiny, I suppose,
Yeah,
if
yeah.
that's right. Because sometimes I'm starting to find games like sort of you've only got one path through the game. They're interesting enough, but you'd like a bit of variety there. You
Yeah,
know, sometimes
absolutely.
it's
I
a wee
think
bit
that's.
not boring, but still interesting. But I would like a bit of choice in some of these games as well.
Yeah, and I think that a game like this actually has a lot more choice than a modern game like Fallout 4 or Skyrim or
Yeah,
any of like
or like
Bethesda's RPGs.
relating it to Ding Ding, a blind legend, previous podcast. You know, it does. There's no choice in a blind legend. Not to say that it's not in. It's a great game, but you know, again, like you're playing a specific path, aren't you, in that game?
Yeah, it
So
has
with
a
this, totally different game,
set in
mind you.
stone narrative.
Yeah, set in stone narrative. Where with this, the choices and the paths you can take are endless, and the replay value is endless as well. You know, I mean, $7.99 or whatever you've paid for it is well worth. It's worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, it really is. And it makes, again, I've been saying how refreshing and different it is compared to a lot of games released now, but it's quite nice not having that real time, Twitch based action, because it gives you a chance to just plan out everything and
Yeah, you've got to
experience
think
the
things
world.
out.
Kind of, again,
Yeah.
it's very similar to a novel almost, isn't it?
Yes.
Like a game book.
It's a really cool thing because what you were saying earlier, you know how you touched on you were getting different bits of advice from your
Yeah.
clan ring, as it's called, your advisors. And the advisors are the key to your game. And you've got to pick what advisors you think are going to suit the purpose best, don't you? And it's just interesting that you're all getting different bits of advice from each one. And, you know, how do you know what to go with? That's the thing that do you always take the chief's advice, or do you take an advisor who you know worships a different god to Orlanth? Who Orlanth in the game is the god who is he is the father of all things.
It's like Zeus,
Yeah. So, but
fantasy
then do
Zeus.
you go against him? Because you know, heaven help you if you go against, pardon the pun, but heaven help you if you go against, has it? You know, advice of someone that's worships Orlanth, so it's a really
Well, do
difficult.
you, in games like this, do you tend to make choices and behave in a similar way to how you would in real life? Do you do
I was going to
things,
come on,
do you do things,
yeah.
in accordance with your own morality, or do you do things that you think will be more entertaining? Like, do you want to be, a really nasty guy and do something horrible just because you think it might be fun to see what happens? Or do you
It's a
do
bit of
what's going to be, like,
both,
most efficient?
yeah. It's a bit, but I mean, I am in real life. I like to think of myself as quite an efficient. You know, if something's going to get done, do it right.
Especially if it involves killing dog people, right?
Especially if it involves killing. You know, don't leave one alive. Just annihilate that son. You know, get them out of existence. That's disgraceful, isn't
Dog people are getting a bad rap on the show today.
it? Oh, I don't know. I had a quacking time killing the dogs people. Oh, the jokes are never going to
Taking their own sound and using it
end
against them. That's low, man. That's low.
That's bad, isn't it? But you know, I just. But then, if I say they were like, I don't know, doggy people or something like that,
Oh,
just
then it
like,
would be fine, would
then
it?
because I have a guide dog, I would be embracing them with open
Oh
arms, and they
man.
could have my food. They could, you
But
know.
that's more confusing, not less, because I thought that your whole thing about that was that, you had to do it for your people. But if it was dogs, it would be okay. So dog people are that low beneath humans that.
Well, you know, I didn't have to do it for my people. I didn't have to take their
Well, what
land,
if it was,
but
what if it was, okay, what if it was like a. What if it was a raccoon tribe, okay? How would you
yeah,
have decimated them? Would you
ah,
have.
take them out. Yeah,
But if it was a dog tribe, no, what about a cat tribe?
The cat, I would actually have burned their land rather than took it. They would have been killed and they would have been extinct, and I would have burned in their land. Let alone,
okay.
You could tell I'm not a cat person.
What about what about a jaguar clan? You know, they're kind of dangerous, but they're also majestic. They're not just cats, you know, they're more like hunters.
Yeah.
They can be dangerous.
I would take them to see if they either had any meat. I would kill them all and see if they had any meat or value in terms of trade for their skins. So they would go as well.
That's
yeah.
disturbingly pragmatic. I can see you thought about it.
But you see though how, you know, that you, James is trying to put me on the spot, but you know, everybody could have a different... The beauty of the game was, James and I are playing exactly the same game with the same... you know, level. James isn't listening to any audio or anything. It's the same game that we're both playing.
Yeah.
And our perspective, it's just I'm using navigating the game in a different way to James.
How do you find the reader audio, like, when you're...
I think it's
immersive?
Great. I think it's great. I mean, really, the problem is there's so much... You know how you've got your map bit, you've got a war section, you've got a farming section, you've got all different sections, and that is... I would say you'd either have to really try and mind map where everything is on the screen, which is, I'll not lie to you, it's going to take you a very long time, not to put you off, or you must have a really, really good knowledge of voiceover gestures, particularly tapping at the top of the screen with four fingers to move to the top. You know, a four finger tap at the bottom of the screen will move you to the bottom, the end of things. It made it easier, to put it bluntly, that I had a really good knowledge of voiceover when I was navigating this game, and it added to the experience.
But
as
overall,
well.
It's quite accessible.
Well, it's fully, absolutely, 100% accessible. If you've just got a wee bit of patience and perseverance, you'll pick it up.
And the developer really deserves credit for that, doesn't he? Because that's resource intensive. You know, that involves programming, involves... you know, going back and revisiting stuff, so it's good that you did that.
Yeah, and I actually asked the developer, contacted him and said, you know, is it okay to use some of your content for a podcast? And he said, absolutely, you know, so he's big on it. David Dunham is big on accessibility anyway, and I have asked him about, you know, the which I can't wait for, as I've said, Six Ages, when that comes out, I believe he is hoping to make that fully accessible to visually impaired people as well. That's and he cool. wants our feedback, because it, as you know, with some games on the App Store, games, there's a lot of bugs, especially when it first comes out. So again, give him feedback on even King of Dragon Pass. You know, any feedback this gaming developer could get, I think it'd be, because he's went out of his way to make this game accessible. I mean, I think the fact that he's redesigned his gaming engine is just a testament in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, he's obviously, I mean, if the game did come out in the late 90s, these developers kind of from way back when have a more hobbyist bent. Like nowadays it's, you know, massive multi-million dollar budgets and it's quite industrial. But back then it was more, you know, I'm doing it for the love of it. So you can tell he has quite a lot of affection for his games and the people who play them, if he was willing to do that, you know, because it obviously wasn't driven by money, was it? Because, I mean, I know he has the information from voiceover, but I'd imagine he wasn't going to massively open up the game to a huge amount of sales.
Yeah. I mean, there will be those that play it, you know, that's visually impaired, but it's not going to absolutely... It'll add to his profits, probably, but again, you know, not a significant... I couldn't see it being a significant amount, James. To...
But that doesn't mean that developers shouldn't do it.
Exactly. And the amount of people that I, or developers, that I have emailed and contacted in the past, and the response I get, I'm sorry, we can't, we'd love to do it, but we'd have to redesign our home gaming engine. Mm-hmm. Well, here's a guy that's actually done it. You know, another developer of, the developer which we'll do a podcast on, A Dark Room, which is another, definitely an RPG game. And that was totally inaccessible when it first came out. And it's just genuine ignorance. They've never given a thought that, hey, blind people can use iPhones, blind people can play computers or use computers. And again, the developer of A Dark Room was contacted. What did he do, James? He redesigned his own gaming engine and made the game completely accessible to visually impaired people. And then on the follow-up game he did, called The Ensign, which is a prequel to A Dark Room, he just designed voiceover into his gaming engine from the very start. So, you know, you just see how a couple of developers can make so much difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the future.
And it's interesting that these efforts are coming from the, you know, the smaller independent developers, when it would assumedly be much easier for the big budget, you know, multi-million dollar corporations to have one guy integrate voiceover support.
Yeah, I listened to a gaming lecture by a visually impaired person, and he said that was cost was a main reason why more gaming developers weren't redesigning their gaming engine. But this is these are small time gaming developers that's doing it, as James says, and you just think, why can't the big gaming developers invest some money into it? Because surely they're rolling in cash, but
yeah, well, I suppose their argument would be that, you know, as the scale of the project increases, so too does the cost for every minor change. You know, if it's a gigantic, you know, symphony of a project with so many moving parts, changing one small variable might destabilize everything else. And I can imagine it being more difficult than it sounds in a big game. But still, I think the solution is not to necessarily go back and do it now, but for the larger game companies to
maybe make future
games
in
the future. Yeah, move forward with the idea that they have an obligation to make their games more accessible.
Yeah, and we are urged, as you know, visually impaired people, to contact gaming developer if there's any games out there that just do what I do. If you find a game you'd like to play it and it's totally inaccessible, contact the gaming developer right away. Twitter is a really good way, isn't it, James, to do that? Because
absolutely,
if you send them an email, as I have discovered in the past, when you send them emails, they can easily just ignore it or say, oh, we didn't get it. But with Twitter, you can't ignore it.
Name
when it's
shame.
Out there.
Name
yeah.
shame.
I mean, maybe not naming shame's a bit
Don't
strong.
Name and shame.
God, you're on about me coming duck people. God.
I was naming shame worse than genocide. The poor duck people.
Sorry, we went back to the duck people. Okay. But no, it's just, you know, if you are contacting people, then certainly you could cite A-Sharp, or particularly David Dunham. I'm sure he won't mind me naming him in the podcast. So he's made his game completely accessible. And I like a game like this, James, because I like in-depth games like this.
Me too.
And there's not enough of them, I don't think, available to visually impaired people. You know, you've got this, A Blind Legend, A Dark Room, Star Traders, possibly, is another really in-depth one.
Yeah.
We won't even mention Silver Sword.
Silver Sword, yeah. A confusing enigma of a game.
Yes, which apparently is fully accessible with voiceover, and even James, who is fully sighted...
I did not play that game to be accessible for me. They need to redesign it for me, because I couldn't do it good.
We could, no. James got slightly further than me, but not... just even sighted wise, I think you were struggling there. So
yeah, I'm sure Silver Sword's okay.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. We'll maybe revisit it, but the way we're feeling about it at the moment, we won't be doing a podcast on it any time.
It's gone the way of the duck people.
Soon. So. Yeah. Well, no, because they're it's not extinct. It's still on the App Store.
Oh, okay.
The duck people are no more.
It's a few rungs above the duck people then.
Yes, yeah, and just unless I restart the game.
Just to go back and destroy the duck people again.
Well, that's why I'm not going to restart the game. I don't want them infesting the game again. So
This podcast has taken a very dark turn.
Yeah, I'm revealing that.
Should we actually just start doing episodes on how much we hate the duck people?
Yeah.
Like, list the top 10 reasons duck people need to be
That's it.
Eradicated.
As soon as I'm finished this podcast, I'm going to send James Park and go on Twitter, and I'm going to go hashtag why I hate dog people.
Wow.
No.
As you can see, the game has inspired a new level of hatred in Stuart.
In Stuart.
which I suppose is a testament to some quality it has, whether that's something you'd be interested in experiencing yourself, I don't know, but it is entertaining at the very least.
I'm so happy that dog people is a fictional, you know...
I don't think you'd be saying it if they weren't fictional, though, would you? That would be quite offensive.
Well, exactly, because, you know, I might wake up in the morning and Mice have been pecked out or something, you know, and you just, oh God, I'm away in a duck.
They have quite blunt beaks though, don't they? Could a duck do that? I don't think so. That's just one of their many inadequacies.
Yeah, but if you get a lot of them attacking you at the one time.
Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
I think I would rather fight one horse-sized duck.
Really?
Yeah, because I've more chance of taking
beak,
it out.
Though. But think about a duck the size of a horse. It's going to be so strong. It's like, oh, I reckon 100 duck-sized horses would be easier. Because what are they going to do?
But they could swarm you.
But what would they do? They can't climb you, can they? Because they've got hooves. Like, they're not gonna...
But they could suffocate you.
But you see, have to, it's a difficult one.
Yeah. How have we gotten on to horse-sized ducks and duck-sized horses?
Is that not what the podcast is about?
I don't know.
What is this?
This is the wackiest, darkest podcast we have ever done.
So far.
So far.
So overall, Stuart, you'd recommend the game?
Yeah, I think we're maybe better ending this podcast pretty soon. I absolutely love the game and I would wholeheartedly recommend it. And again, I cannot wait for Six Ages, and hopefully there's duck people in that I could kill as well.
Hopefully duck people get a rest.
They get a maybe, yeah. I might live, but hey, I've killed the duck people. I've extinct them. I wonder if there's maybe duck people that I don't know about hiding in the wilderness of the world, which I haven't explored yet, and maybe that decision to extinct the duck people is going to come back and haunt me somewhere else down the line.
Maybe.
Oh, I'm frightened now.
Some might call that poetic justice.
Yeah. But on that sort of very scary note now, I don't know if I want to, I'll have to play this game a bit more to find out what happens. But that's the thing, once you pick, you start playing the game, you can't put it down, you know, because there's so many, did you find that, because there's so many elements?
Yeah, well, I found when I first started, it was kind of, it was a little bit overwhelming, but then I got into it and I met the duck people. I just, the storyline started, you know, progressing and
it's,
it became really difficult. It's kind
of hooks you, doesn't it?
It's like a non-linear novel. It's like you can choose which path to venture down.
Actually, there's an interesting bit. You can actually make, defeat a tribe, you could capture them and make them slaves. And, you know, slavery is a big... did you come to that bit, or...?
I did not take any slaves.
I didn't take any slaves to begin with, but then once I was raided by a tribe and I defeated them, I thought you could either... One of the decisions is you could just kill all the ones that's left, or you could take them as slaves. And I was in a dilemma because I thought, well, I could take them as slaves to punish them for... You know, you could let them go as well, sorry, I should have said that, but I could have took them as slaves to punish them for coming in and try to raid us. Do I kill them outright to put a bit of fear into the remaining tribe? You know what I mean? Or do I just let them go to come back in maybe another day and seek vengeance? And I thought, what do I do?
You killed them, didn't you?
I think I took them as slaves with great... And after I did it, I actually went, I wish I'd not done that. You know, there's a bit of a moral thing there, you know, because slavery's just bad, isn't it? You know, when
yes, generally frowned upon.
And well, actually, it ended up, there is I do have a compassionate side, because eventually there was a bit in the game where they were asking, we've been with you for so long, could we join your tribe as family, or... Could you let us go?
No.
I let them go. You know, just go in. And
that's nice.
And they were actually, my popularity rose as...
Amongst who? Your own tribe?
As well as relations with, because a lot of it's forming good relations with other tribes as well.
Just and like real life again?
Yeah, so they went away and I think they formed a wee semblance of their own tribe. And so I felt justified eventually. But I shouldn't have taken them as slaves in the first place. But anyway, we better end this podcast. Yeah, we're going to overrun.
So obviously a lot of, you know, moral life lessons to learn from.
It's a very, can I just ask, you know, we are on Twitter, by the way, @monkeygamingfsb. I'd be really interested to hear feedback on this, either if you've played it or, you know, if you listen to this podcast, and because we... Would you recommend it, James, by the way?
Yes, I would. I'd recommend it.
Just because it's a different...
I think no matter who you are, actually, if you're listening to this, it would be interesting for you to play that game because it has some unconventional elements to it. And it's not... I don't know if when people hear this, if they're getting, you know, the exact image of what it is, but it's not, you know, it's not like a traditional RPG. It's like more old school. It's like something from the late 80s, early 90s. But it's really interesting to have that kind of world building because it confuses you in ways that you've never been confused or haven't been confused in a long time.
Yeah.
But it's also very enriching.
It's a great way of putting it. You're building a world, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah,
like when a dark room, you're like in that, you're building a village. And yeah, so that's a really good way of putting it. And hopefully we've tantalised you enough to go and, you know, I know sometimes $7.99 for an app especially is quite dear, some people say.
Take a leap of faith,
yep. And on our heads be it if you email us or tweet us and say, we don't like it, you know, we'll take full responsibility for that. You're not getting your money back. On that note, thanks very much again for listening to us for all this time, and we will be back next week for another Monkey Gaming podcast. And just before I go, do you know what I'm having for my tea tonight?
I don't. Leave the duck people alone.
Duck.
Well, thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Bye.